action, but someone gave me tickets to the opener at Fenway Park. And if you remember last year, it started at 1:30, I think, but it didn't end till about 7, and we lost. So I didn't get back here in time. It's an honor for me to be here, and I'm very grateful. Although I must say, it was a greater honor for me to bury Al Clark of Clydesdale fame, a very beloved character in the town. I didn't even know that Sudbury existed for the most part for many years until I was assigned here 2 years ago. However, it's interesting that 22 years ago, I heard advertised on the radio one of the temples in town here had put out a prayer book. And that's the prayer, one of my most favorite prayers that I've used many times. I would like to offer it for your meditation tonight. A Jewish prayer. Thank you, God of eternity, for the great wonder of your creation, for the earth, the stars, the sun, and the moon, and the beauty of your universe, with which in your great kindness you have blessed me. Thank you for granting me life in all its richness, for its brilliant moments of joy which allow me to soar as the birds, and even for its anguish and pain which somehow seem to precipitate inner growth and change. For all these things, God, I am grateful. But thank you especially, God, in your abundant love, for having chosen to make me a human being, blessed among all the fruits of your creation, with a mind to reason and seek truth and justice, with a soul which can feel pain, ecstasy, and compassion, and has the freedom to choose life and goodness over cruelty and destruction, and with a heart which can love and care and reach out to touch the hearts of my brothers and sisters as together we walk through the years of our lives. Sudbury has a wonderful town, a wonderful community, but I would hope that it's famous not for its lovely homes, for its beautiful community life together, for its excellent schools. I would pray that you'll be famous for reaching out to people, especially to the older people in your town, making sure that they have abatements for taxes, that they have homes to live, and that all of them will be welcome in your beautiful community.
Thank you, Father, for that totally non-political invocation. I've heard a lot of excuses for missing town meeting, but when a priest stands up here and tells me that he suffered through 5 hours of the Red Sox losing, I thought we were going to hear something from the story of Job, Father. As you know, each year we have the Pledge of Allegiance led an annual town meeting by a student from Lincoln Sudbury Regional High School. This year, the individual selected for that honor is Kamiko Tanaka. Ms. Tanaka, a senior at LS, is a Lincoln Sudbury Regional High School scholar. She is editor-in-chief of the LS yearbook, a member of the varsity soccer team, and captain of both the winter and spring track teams. She also has been active in the debating team for 4 years and is a state qualifying member. In addition, she is a talented musician playing the violin in the school orchestra. I've had the pleasure of introducing many extraordinary young people for this honor, and this young lady certainly is an extraordinary young lady. Ms. Tanaka.
I pledge of allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, for liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. At this time, I would like to recognize Selectman Rapinian for a very special award and honor.
Thank you, Mr. Moderator. Before I give this presentation, we'd like to show a video that was made by Mark Thompson and his group.
The shot of Sudbury today illustrates some surprising contrasts. Historic homes line the town's main streets. Outside the town center, there are well-planned, modern neighborhood developments. Shopping is popular on Route 20, where large and small stores cater to every customer's desire. When the business district is bustling with shoppers, a change of pace is only moments away. Sudbury has many types of open space: meadows, forests, wetlands, and guarded wildlife habitats. A stop at Longfellow's Wayside Inn gives visitors the chance to tour its charming grist mill and the graceful Martha Mary Chapel. Sudbury's appearance is a testament to concerned, thoughtful planning by its citizens throughout its 364-year history. The town's first settlers passed on to their descendants the importance of preserving the town's many unique features. Because of this, Sudbury has evolved into a community where families settle and grow, seniors enjoy their retirement years, and citizens work together, so that this is truly a place with something for everyone. A look around town gives one a feeling of times long ago. Historic markers throughout Sudbury bring pictures of past battles and events to mind. Citizen activism has had local and national impact since the mid-1600s. Sudbury fought for the colony's freedom during the Revolutionary War, and the spirit of colonial Sudbury is captured on town holidays when reenactments of famous battle scenes come to life. The annual 4th of July parade and colonial muster also recall these long-ago days. The Civil War monument in front of Goodnow Library recalls Sudbury's abolitionist stand against slavery, as well as activism in the Underground Railroad. Sudbury has remained committed to the way things should be. In the past, citizens have said no to Henry Ford's attempts to industrialize, to the international community's efforts to place the United Nations headquarters here, and to Boston Edison's plan to crisscross open space with above-ground power lines. Other, less publicized examples of citizen initiatives include the construction of the Sudbury Methodist Church, completed in 1963. It was paid for and built entirely by its parishioners. Kid Space, an open design community playground, was built behind the Peter Noy School in 1986. 1,500 volunteers and Fort Devens 39th Engineer Battalion worked together to complete the project in 5 days. We asked town historian Kurt Garfield for his thoughts on community activism.
It's a town where, perhaps you've lived here for a year or so, it's like you've been here forever, and you don't tell anybody you might come from Birmingham later or wherever. You always seem to come from Sudbury, and it starts for the kids, for the people that volunteer in the Scouts and Little League and with all these little things. They instill this togetherness thing to the kids. And I know when I was Scouts, I had the Explorers, which is the high school and college age kids. And they fight like crazy amongst themselves. But if somebody challenged Sudbury or challenged one of them, they stick together like glue. And they've grown up and they've gone to different places. I see them all the time on the internet. And they always retain this fondness for Sudbury and things that go on in Sudbury.
Senior citizens enrich the life of the town with years of experience living, working, and participating in important projects. Sudbury provides a wealth of services and resources for seniors. The Sudbury Senior Center is always bustling with activities, programs, and special events organized by dedicated volunteers. Ruth Grizzell, Director of the Council on Aging, speaks about the tremendous impact senior programs can have.
I'd like to read a letter that we received recently from a very, very grateful daughter of a woman who passed away earlier in the year. And it really, I think, expresses what volunteers do for frail elders living in Sudbury. You were there for her every day until she passed away in March. You helped to find what programs were available to Mom, to help her with cleaning and grocery shopping. You brought a hot meal every lunchtime, along with a friendly face, a cheery greeting and smile, and called Mom each morning to say hello and to make sure everything was okay. You also raked her leaves in the fall, hung curtains for her, changed light bulbs that she couldn't reach, put the plastic on her patio screens in the fall, took it off in the spring, and many other odds and ends. You were truly her life support system on a daily basis. Diane and I couldn't always be there, but the Senior Center was, always. I am so very grateful to you. Without our volunteers, this couldn't have happened. And I'd like to add that we have 253 volunteers on our rolls, and I thank every one of them.
Just as the elderly provide rich experience and depth to the life of a community, its youth bring energy and promise to its future. The Youth Coordinator and Teen Center Director work with an army of parent volunteers to put together dances, theme parties, and other fun social programs. Talk to most parents of school-aged children, and they'll tell you that one of their busiest activities is getting their youngsters to and from sporting activities, practices, and games. The Recreation Department and the schools offer almost every type of sport, and parent volunteers are ever-present on the field and behind the scenes while games are being played. Peter Buxton, a longtime advocate of youth sports programs, talks about the importance of parental involvement.
They are the majority force in coaches in the town sports. For example, 3,500 people will be playing on the playing fields this spring, and most of those people, most of the coaches, will be parents coaching the youngsters. So it's a tremendous impact.
PTOs and parent volunteers are the lifeblood of school programs. Their fundraising efforts and tireless work bring new curriculum programs and other enrichment activities to all grade levels. Bridges, a highly successful and acclaimed project, is an intergenerational mentoring program provided by over 200 Sudbury seniors for elementary students. Seniors visit classrooms and bring planned discussions and sharing sessions designed to promote common ground and understanding. At Lincoln Sudbury High School, student volunteers help teachers run the White House Preschool. Most are considering careers in early childhood education. We talked with Lincoln Sudbury Superintendent Dr. John Ritchie about community projects at the high school.
Community service has always been a very, very important priority here at Lincoln Sudbury, I think throughout its 40-year history. And we certainly encourage our students to be actively involved in their community, and they really rise to that expectation. In a formal way, we do have a community service requirement here that requires each student to commit a certain number of hours in order to graduate, and I think by and large kids do this not only gladly and happily but willingly and learn a lot from it. So I think that this school certainly encourages having kids give back, and I must say it's a two-way street because we have been the benefit of a tremendous amount of community service that's come our way, which I just think is one of the great things about the school and the community.
Town government works with organizations and ensures that Sudbury functions efficiently and effectively. The Board of Selectmen and over 50 other committees, all volunteers, oversee many town initiatives like planning and development, recreation, historic preservation, and conservation, to name some important areas. Town Manager Maureen Valente speaks about the importance of volunteers in town government.
One of the things that makes Sudbury so extraordinary is the role of volunteers in our town government, and that's critical to the self-democracy that we have here, and we're so extraordinarily blessed to have them. There's so many different kinds of committees. We have the policy committees, your Board of Selectmen, school committee members, etc., the extraordinary amount of time that they devote after hours and, again, week in and week out, makes Sudbury part of what it is. There are work committees, those kind of committees. The Sudbury Day Committee, new one, is part of that, and the September 11th Memorial Committee. They just work very hard to put on special events and special activities and opportunities here in the town. Study committees, there's ad hoc committees that are appointed by the board. When we need to know what residents are thinking, a new Blue Ribbon Committee has just been formed to look at site selection for affordable housing that we'll be giving out more information on as we come up. All of these take time and effort from our residents to volunteer because they're committed to making Sudbury a better place. I'm fortunate to be a town manager in a town that has this level of dedication and volunteerism. I value it every day, and I thank every member of the community who volunteers their time and efforts, trying to give their ideas to help make Sudbury a better place to live, better place to work, raise families, and just be in on a day in and day out basis. My gratitude to all of them.
Citizens have a history of coming together to make things happen in Sudbury. At the forefront of this great number of volunteers is a well-known couple who have spent over 43 years in Sudbury doing whatever needs to be done. Clay and June Allen live, work, and volunteer in this town that they love and call home. We asked Clay and June what has motivated their super volunteerism.
Because we've lived here so long, we feel we're the generation that should help take care of the town.
A lot of the things we do not associated necessarily with the committee, but we see something that needs to be done, and we do it.
A lot of open land. In fact, when we moved here, this is the only roads that were paved were the main ones, Concord Road, Route 27. All the little side roads were still dirt roads.
Yeah, I don't see anything super about us. It's just work. It's all the things we like to do, things we could do, it was within our capabilities to do these things. So we did them.
It's because we had a jack of all trades here, so I hope we can do this.
Yeah.
Take a walk through your town now that you have seen this video. Youth sports teams are out on the fields. Parents and children discover the toddler park together. Ask your kids about things in school that capture their imaginations. Delight in beautiful open spaces, island planters filled with lovely flowers, and homes filled with history. Enjoy our town events, our holiday parades, and colonial celebrations. Think about our volunteers, young and old, in a new light. Step forward and thank a volunteer. Even become one yourself. Throughout this presentation, we have highlighted the tremendous spirit of volunteers in Sudbury. We wish to salute and to thank each of you for your tireless work and countless hours, all for the sake of a beautiful town we proudly call home.
Ms. Rapinian.
Thank you, Mr. Moderator. Having just seen the film and knowing that many people in here have volunteered at one point or another in their lives, we would like to thank all of the volunteers and all of the future volunteers for giving of their time so freely. At this time, though, what we would like to do is ask Clay Allen to step forward, please. This is actually a surprise, I hope it doesn't scare you, Clay. We just have a few words that we'd like to say to you on behalf of the town, sir. It is with honor and our pleasure that the town recognize your extraordinary volunteerism. You and June are a terrific team from which Sudbury has benefited tremendously. Whether it's to perform and participate on the September 11th Memorial Committee, being the jack of all trades, as June said, helping beautify our many island gardens about the town over the years, or working on the historic Hosmer House, Clay, you do it with such a sense of selflessness that we are all inspired. It is doubtful that others realize the scope of your volunteerism. However, as demonstrated here tonight, it has not gone unnoticed. You have set the bar very high, and we wanted to recognize your extraordinary contributions in so many ways to our community. So in deep, deep appreciation, Clay, we present you with this special commendation on behalf of the entire community for your super volunteerism.
I'm advised that the certified free cash available for this meeting is the sum of $944,818. I have further examined and found in order the call of the meeting, the officer's return of service, and the town clerk's return of mailing. At this time, I'd like to recognize Chairman O'Brien for a motion to dispense with the reading of the call, the returns, the notice, and the reading of the individual articles.
So moved, Mr.
Does that receive a second? All in favor? Aye. Passes. At this time, I'd like to introduce to you some of the people up here on the stage and down here who will be helping out running this town meeting. To my immediate right, Barbara Sierra, our town clerk, and to her right, our assistant town clerk, Judy Newton. The selectman, John Dubinsky, Larry O'Brien, and Kirsten Rapinian, both of whom we've already heard from. Our town manager, Maureen Valente. Our town accountant, Susan Peterson, is down front there. Our town council, immediately to my left, Paul Kenny. Then two ladies from the selectman's office who make this whole thing work, Jan Silva and Mary Daniels. The finance committee is to my far left, and I will ask them to raise their hands as I read their names. The co-chair, Tracy Billig. Co-chair, Michael Grossberg. Vice chair, Larry Rowe. Sheila Stewart. John Nicola. Bob Herstack. Martha Raganese. Robert Jacobson. And Donald Hutchinson. Our assistant town manager, Wayne Walker. And our finance director, treasurer, and collector, Carrie Spidell. The coffee servers this evening are, Sudbury has 12 teams which compete in Destination Imagination, a group adventure and creative problem solving. And join me in congratulating the Curtis Middle School structure building team, which has advanced from the state tournament to the global championships to be held in May in Tennessee. Please support the team by visiting the refreshment table behind the auditorium throughout the evening. There are soups, salads, sandwiches, hot pretzels, soda, coffee, and wonderful sweets. And proceeds from a raffle, I'm guessing the amount of weight their wood structure can hold until it breaks, is also available for participation by all. I've also been asked to announce that the Thursday Garden Club of Sudbury will be presenting a kitchen and garden tour on Saturday, June 14th, 2003, 10 a.m. until 3:30 p.m., rain or shine, no refunds. And they're selling tickets out back where the coffee is available. I would like at this time to introduce two guests. The first is, you know, traditionally we introduce to you the students who are in the Lincoln Sudbury foreign exchange program. This year there is but one, but she is here from Spain, Malene Madrid Anderson. And secondly, I understand here tonight, and I would like to introduce him to you, is Dr. Don Brackett, who will take over as our K-8 superintendent this year. Dr. Brackett? From the great state of Michigan. At this time, I know they're not in the finals this year, but that's all right. I recognize Selectman Rapinian for, I believe it's Rapinian, for the resolution in memory of those citizens who have served the town and have passed away during the past year.
Stay here. Thank you, Mr. Moderator. Whereas a town is a family composed of all the generations which live within its border, the personalities and gifts of its citizens and employees, and above all, the character and dedication which they contribute to that family define its honor, its standards, its accomplishments, and its character. And whereas the past year has seen some very special members of the Sudbury community pass from life, and a grateful town wishes to acknowledge their gifts, now, therefore, be it resolved that the town of Sudbury, in town meeting assembled, hereby expresses its appreciation for the special services and gifts of Mary Anderson, John J. Baker, George H. Bell, Carl Ellery, Paul F. Hill, Louis Huff, Medford Huntley, William Joyce, Joseph Klein, Lori Loftus, Grace McMiniman, Alan Newton, Gordon Peterson, Leonard Sanders, Frank Sherman, Leslie Scogg, Robert Williams, Leslie Woodard, and be it further resolved that the town of Sudbury, in town meeting assembled, records for posterity in the minutes of this meeting its recognition and appreciation for their special gifts and services to our community.
And I assume that resolution receives a second, and all are in favor. Records will show it passed unanimously. A few procedural matters. I hope everyone has made himself or herself familiar with the summary of basic town meeting procedures printed on pages little I and little two I's of your warrant. It's stated in that write-up, this facility was designed so those in the audience could see those on the stage and not vice versa. And as a result, the lights here make it difficult to see the hall from the stage. This is particularly so with respect to the back of the hall. And it will greatly facilitate things if you wish to speak, if you simply take your place at one of the microphones, and then I'll be sure to be able to see you and recognize you. At this time, I recognize Chairman O'Brien for the Board of Selectmen's report on the state of the town.
Thank you, Mr. Moderator. Good evening. On behalf of the Board of Selectmen, Town Manager, all of the boards, and committees, I would like to thank you for coming out this evening. Welcome to town meeting, an exercise that has taken place for over 300 years here in Sudbury. To give us a little historical perspective, I would like to share with you some of what John Powers wrote in Sudbury, A Brief History. In 1638, the first white settlers came to Sudbury. As the settlement grew, Sudbury townsmen developed not merely a new community, but a new concept. Government with the consent of the governed. Sudbury's role in the development of the town meeting form of government and its insistence upon the direct right of a citizen to choose his governors and make himself heard upon any issue in open forum did much to lay the foundation of American democracy. As we begin this year's town meeting, the opportunity to be heard on many issues and to make decisions concerning how to approach and deal with the challenges we face as a community will be plentiful. As in the past, we are faced with many challenges. This year, some are new, and some continue as part of the never-ending dialogue concerning the town's future direction. Our challenges come from many different places this year. Our police and DPW departments have been impacted by the call-up to active duty of two of our town's employees, police dispatcher John Mitchell and DPW employee Danny Stevens. Other challenges that we will be confronted with this year will be the result of decisions that will be made by our legislators and our governor with regard to reductions in local aid to cities and towns. These decisions being made on Beacon Hill will certainly factor into the discussion that we will have this evening when we take up Article 4. As part of that discussion, we are going to ask you to support the continuation of town meeting to a date certain in May. The Board of Selectmen and Finance Committee have worked closely with all of the cost centers this year to deliver a balanced, zero-growth budget. To accomplish this goal, all budgets experienced reductions that in total exceeded $223,000. And yet, with all of the work that has been done so far, we are still very concerned that the budget detailed in the warrant will not balance due to the uncertainty of the state's budget. The proposed cuts and changes in state aid formulas that have been made in the governor's budget proposal would negatively impact Sudbury beyond the current amount set forth in the zero-growth budget. While simultaneously work is currently underway on the House and Senate versions of the state budget, with indications that cuts of 15% to 20% to existing local aid will be necessary to help close the state budget gap. The additional time that is gained by continuing this meeting until May 21st allows for the school districts, as well as the town manager, to scrutinize their budgets and for ways to reduce expenses with the least amount of impact on the quality of services that will be delivered. While the Board of Selectmen and Finance Committee voted unanimously for no override this year, we may be forced to reconsider our position after the budget picture begins to focus sometime around mid-May. Working with the cost centers, we will have to decide what level of impact we are willing to allow the governor and legislature to have on the quality and quantity of services that will be delivered by the town and school districts in relationship to our expectations. It is our intention to make the best decisions possible over the next 6 weeks by utilizing all of the information that will be made available by the House and Senate budget committees. When we return in May, we intend on presenting a budget for your approval that will not be a hollow house of cards. Looking beyond the budget, the Board of Selectmen, working with the town manager, boards and committees, as well as the professional staff in various departments, will address issues over the course of the next year that in some cases will be new endeavors, and others that will be continuations of initiatives that are already underway. Article 30 will provide budget and public safety efficiencies. Articles 50 and 51 work towards enhancing economic opportunities for property owners within our commercial districts and thus offer the potential of increased commercial tax receipts. These two articles are a small part of a broader vision that is being developed to revitalize the Route 20 commercial district to eventually have the look, feel, and functionality as Sudbury's Main Street. A new initiative for the Board of Selectmen has been to establish the Community Housing Committee, charged with looking at housing issues in the affordable to moderate price ranges, and to develop a plan that will ultimately create a spectrum of housing options from rental to home ownership, from town employees and first-time home buyers to empty nesters and seniors at assorted price points. In addition, a second committee will be formed to evaluate assorted town-owned land for its suitability to accommodate scattered site affordable housing. Other articles that you will be asked to support from this year's warrant are continuations or next chapters of previous year's articles. Article 32 is the result of last year's decision by the town to adopt the Community Preservation Act. The nine-member committee has worked diligently to bring forth its first article that will ask for your approval of the committee's spending suggestions for historic preservation, land conservation, and the initial funding for the development of affordable rental housing. Article 48 designates a number of roads as scenic and helps to protect part of Sudbury's unique character, one of the stated goals and primary themes within our master plan. Article 49, a committee of four representing the Zoning Board, the Planning Board, Design Review Board, and the Selectmen has brought for your consideration a revision to the portion of the zoning bylaw pertaining to signs. This is a continuation of the effort from 2 years ago when the bulk of our zoning bylaw was recodified and approved by this body. In addition, the Board of Selectmen, working with the town manager and other department heads, continue to examine opportunities for enhancements to the Route 20 corridor. Work continues on promoting the creation of a business improvement district, while two town committees examine the options and feasibility of bringing wastewater treatment to Route 20. Beyond Route 20, the Board of Selectmen and town manager are committed to working with Dennis Minoni, our Park and Recreation Director, and the Park and Recreation Commissioners to develop a plan that will provide long-term viability for the Atkinson Pool facility. Moreover, the Board continues to study and evaluate options for balanced and equitable property tax relief for seniors. Article 54, sponsored by Citizen Petition, will provide a spirited debate that will touch on many issues and will require each of us to separate the emotional from the logical. The Board of Selectmen is willing to consider options that are the result of a thorough examination process that provides relief from the burden of property taxes for those seniors who truly need it, as determined by fair and equitable means testing. We urge everyone to attend tomorrow evening and to participate in this discussion of issues that are raised within Article 54. While the challenges that I have outlined are great and the issues that we will undertake over the next few evenings are varied, we should take just a moment to appreciate all that we have accomplished in the past 10 years. With all that we have accomplished in the path that we have charted for our town, the town manager, the school administrators, and our very talented professional staff. Many of the tasks and goals that we have accomplished that we should be most proud of, our neighboring communities are just beginning to consider as objectives. Over the past 10 years, we have adopted a town manager form of government, rebuilt and expanded our K-8 school system, wrote a comprehensive master plan, preserved three significant land parcels for open space, adopted bylaws that allow for age-restricted housing to be developed. I'm personally proud to say that both the 38-unit Spring House Pond project developed under our senior residential community bylaw, as well as the 44-unit Frost Farm senior housing development that utilized the incentive senior housing bylaw, are sold out. At Frost Farm, over 22 units are now occupied just 18 months after breaking ground, while construction continues on the remaining homes. We have also adopted the Community Preservation Act, recodified our zoning bylaws, and supported the construction of the new municipal office space and DPW garage facility. And as you entered tonight, obviously you saw the developments that are taking place with the construction of the new Lincoln Sudbury Regional High School. And yet, with all of these positive things that are underway within town government and throughout the town, and all that has been accomplished, our community's greatest asset, as you've already heard this evening and seen in that wonderful video, and it is the grease that helps to make the gears turn in town, may very well be our collective spirit of community. It is alive, vibrant, and strong here in Sudbury. As spring begins to emerge from beneath this frigid, very snowy winter, we can look back and remember a year that was filled with community spirit and made possible through the seemingly endless cadre of volunteers. Volunteers who get involved across a wide array of areas, from sports leagues to community events, environmental concerns to town government. While volunteer boards make up the bulk of our local government, now more than ever, with the current budgetary constraints, we still need talented and dedicated people to work with the boards and commissions in all areas to address critical issues. Town government does not operate in a vacuum. Those ideas that are the most successful have been initiated not by the work or idea of one person, but by working together for a common goal. This year's warrant reflects this type of philosophy. Many articles are co-sponsored by multiple groups. Not that petition articles and single board articles are not important, but collaboration and the desire to address overlapping goals will ultimately provide the most benefits and best finished product for our community. Some of the past year's highlights that were already reviewed, and I'll just touch on briefly, included Sudbury Day, the Hope Sudbury Telethon, the September 11th Memorial Garden that is currently under construction, school volunteers, from parents that serve on PTOs and get involved in their children's classrooms, to the award-winning Bridges program that is a collaboration between the Council on Aging and the K-8 school system. The Senior Center, that in fiscal year 2002 had 271 individuals of all ages volunteer more than 10,000 hours through programs such as stay-in-touch callers, fish drivers, Meals on Wheels, and distributing medical equipment through the Loan Closet and many other service programs. The list goes on to include the Boy Scouts, the Girl Scouts, and their community service projects, our annual townwide roadside cleanup that draws more and more participants every year. The list is numerous, and we should appreciate the efforts of all the residents involved and encourage those that are not involved to join us and to put their skills and talents to work in positive, productive, collaborative ways that will add to our collective quality of life here in Sudbury. Let us go forward in the tradition of town meetings past to address the issues and find solutions to the challenges that we face as a community. Thank you for your time and consideration.
It is my understanding that the Finance Committee wishes to make its general report at the time the budget article comes up. Is that right, Mr. Grossberg? This then brings us to Article 1, here reports. For many years, it's been a tradition at the annual town meeting to honor one of our fellow citizens who has performed valuable service for the town by asking him or her to make the motion under the first article in the warrant. This year, we honor Michael C. Dunn, our fire chief, for the past 20 years. Mike was appointed an auxiliary firefighter in the town of Sudbury in 1966. Later that year, he was appointed a call firefighter and was appointed as a full-time firefighter the following year. 8 years later, in 1975, he was promoted to the rank of captain, and about six weeks thereafter began a leave of absence caused by serious injuries sustained in an accident. He was reinstated as a firefighter in 1977, and the following year again assumed the rank of captain. Some 4 years later, he was named acting assistant chief of the fire department, and on February 1, 1983, at the age of 35, he became the chief of the Sudbury Fire Department. As chief, Mike is also the town forest warden and the civil defense director. In addition, he holds or has held a number of positions of substantial responsibility in the area of fire protection and emergency services. These include president and director of the Central Massachusetts Fire Chiefs Association, Fire District 14 Mutual Aid Coordinator, member of the board of directors of the Massachusetts Fire Prevention Association, member of the Fire Science Board of the Middlesex Community College, and member of the Executive Committee of the Greater Boston Emergency Medical Services Council. In addition, Chief Dunn serves as a director and officer of the Lincoln Sudbury Town Employees Credit Union. What I have said so far pretty much sums up the statistics on Mike Dunn, but I would like to take a minute or two to dwell on the very human Mike Dunn, who through the years has been such a positive force in our community. Under his leadership for the past 20 years, we have had and continue to have one of the finest fire services in the Commonwealth and indeed the country. Wholly apart from the obvious duty of putting out fires, our fire department has superbly trained EMTs to whom many in this town, including your moderator, literally owe their lives. He has instituted programs which assure that elderly people living alone are checked on regularly to be sure they're all right. He has organized and instituted fire education programs in our elementary schools and has been a leader in furthering new and imaginative firefighting techniques and emergency systems. Mike Dunn has set a high standards for his department both by training and example. Many years ago, when my rambunctious then 2-year-old youngest daughter managed to lock herself in the bathroom, my wife did what most people do in this town in a panic situation and called the fire department. Not only was the response swift, but but the responder was the chief himself, who quickly released the young tyke from her self-imposed imprisonment. In short, Mike Gunn is always there when we need help and has been there for some 37 years. It is my great personal honor and privilege to recognize for the motion under Article 1 of this year's town meeting, Chief Michael C. Dunn.
Thank you, Mr. Moderator. I'd just like to take a moment to thank the town. It's been a great 37 years working for you, great 20 years as the fire chief. This is a great town to work in. Article 1, hear the reports. Move to accept the reports of the town boards, commissions, officers, and committees as printed in the 2002 town report or as otherwise presented, subject to the correction of errors, if any, where found.
Does that receive a second? It does. All those in favor? Passes unanimously. The next order of business is the consent calendar. And I refer you to pages little 3Is and little IB of the warrant. I will call out the numbers of the articles one by one. If any voter has doubt about passing any of the motions or wishes an explanation of any subject in the consent calendar, you should stand and say the word hold in a loud, clear voice when the number is called. I will then inquire as to whether the request is for a question or for debate. If the purpose of the request is merely to ask a question, an attempt to obtain a satisfactory answer will be made, and if that occurs, the article will remain on the consent calendar absent a further request to hold. If the purpose of the request is to hold the article for debate, the article will be removed from the consent calendar and restored to its original place in the warrant to be brought up and debated and voted on in the usual way. No voter should hesitate to exercise the right to remove matters from the consent calendar, for it is the view of the voters as to the need for debate that is supreme and not that of the town officials who put together the consent calendar. Having said that, I do hope that voters will remove articles from the consent calendar only in cases of genuine concern. In past years, it has occasionally happened that articles were removed from the consent calendar and when reached in the normal course, passed unanimously without debate or discussion, thus indicating that the initial removal request was perhaps not fully considered before being exercised. I'll now start reading the articles. I do understand there are two that have to be held for technical reasons. Article 8, I believe, is being held by the selectmen. Is that correct? And Article 23 is being held by the selectmen. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay, because of a technical change. All right, Article 11, Article 12, Article 13, 14, 15. You want to hold 15? Is it for a question or for a debate?
It's a question.
What is the question, sir?
Could someone define or explain
Please come to the microphone, and let's all remember what it says in there. Sorry. Please give your name and address, so the town clerk will have a clear record of the meeting.
Thomas Holliker, right. Concord Road, 623.
Okay.
Could someone please explain what the Early Childhood Revolving Fund is?
Yeah. Is somebody, Rich, can you handle that question?
My name is Rich Robinson. I'm the chair of the Sudbury School Committee. The Early Childhood Revolving Fund are fees that are received from the participation of general education students who participate in our mandated special education preschool programs. The state reimburses us for special education costs for those students we're required to serve, but we also have a requirement that 50% of the students who participate must be non-disabled students. They can elect to participate, and the parents pay a fee. This is the fund that holds those fees.
Article 16, 17, 18, 19, 20, 21, 22, 23 has been held, as I said. 24?
Hold.
Is that for a question or for debate?
Article 14, Churchill Street. I'm just holding this and requesting that people read what constitutes real estate tax exemptions for seniors today. Otherwise, I'll let it pass.
Well, so as far as you're concerned, it can stay on the calendar if everybody does a little reading?
That's correct.
Good. Everybody read, quick. Article 25. Article 26. Article 27, Article 28. Very good. At this point, it would be in order for me to take a motion to take Articles 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, 20, 21, 22, 24, 25, 26, 27, and 28 out of order and consider them together at this time. Do I have such a motion?
So moved, Mr. Moderator.
Thank you. Does that receive a second? All in favor, please indicate by raising your cards. All opposed? That passes unanimously. Now it would be in order to take a motion in the words of the consent calendar of motions as printed in the warrant for the Articles 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, 20, 21, 22, 24, 25, 26, 27, and 28. Do I have such a motion?
So moved, Mr. Moderator.
Does that receive a second? It does. All those in favor indicate by raising your cards. Passes unanimously. Article 2, Fiscal Year 03 Budget Adjustments. It was submitted by the Selectman. The vote required on a main motion under this article would be a majority vote. Recognize Selectman Rapinian.
Thank you, Mr. Moderator. Move that consideration of Article 2 be postponed until after Article 4 has been disposed of.
The motion is to postpone this article until after Article 4 is disposed of. Does that receive a second? It does. Do you wish to... speak to that motion at all, Mr. Pinion? Very straightforward.
It's pretty straightforward. We're going to let the Finance Committee, Michael Grossberg, speak on that.
Okay. Mr. Grossberg, do you wish to address this?
As we'll explain under Article 4, FinCom will be asking the town meeting for more time to consider how best to amend the budget to face new revenue reductions in local aid. We want to keep open the possibility of making changes in the FY03 town operating budget that may help these departments cope with reduced revenues in FY04. This motion just makes Article 2 follow Article 4, whether or not town meeting approves the motion to postpone.
All right. Anyone else want to be heard on this motion to postpone? I see no one. All those in favor of the motion to postpone, please indicate by raising your cards. All those opposed, motion passes unanimously. Article 3, unpaid bills, submitted by the town accountant. The vote required on a main motion under this article will be a 4/5 vote. Recognize Terry Spidell, the finance director.
Mr. Moderator, I'm Sue Peterson, town accountant. Move to appropriate $1,934.56 for the payment of an unpaid bill incurred in previous fiscal year. As follows.
Excuse me. They gave me a smaller table. The gavel doesn't fit. Go ahead.
$1,934.56 to pay Taylor Oil New England Incorporated, Public Works Department. Said appropriation to be raised by transfer from free cash.
Does that receive a second? It does. Do you wish to address the motion?
Yes, this is just represents an invoice that was submitted by a vendor after the close of the fiscal year in which the charges were incurred. And under Mass General Law, with the town meeting approval, we will be able to pay the vendor.
Okay. Finance Committee, Ms. Billig.
FinCom recommends approval of this article.
Selectman, FinCom.
Selectmen recommend approval of this article as well. Thank you.
Anyone else wish to be heard on the motion under Article 3? I see no one. All those in favor of the motion under Article 3, please indicate by raising your cards. Any opposed? Passes unanimously. Article 4, the budget. For the benefit of anyone who has not attended town meeting before, at this time normally I would go through a list of items in the budget procedure and how we're going to proceed. However, as you probably realize from Chairman O'Brien's opening remarks, what's going to happen this year is there's going to be a motion to postpone the budget article. If that motion should fail, I will then go through the usual drill of going through the procedure with you. But given the fact that that motion is going to be brought, I think I will go directly to the chairman, one of the co-chairs of the Finance Committee, for the motion to postpone the budget article. Mr. Grossberg? Can we have the motion up in the view graph to start with? Now, what I need is the motion, because he can't talk until he makes a motion.
Okay, so motion clause first.
Or if you want to read the motion, it's fairly straightforward, I
believe. Move to postpone consideration of Article 4 until May 21st, 2003. At 7:30 p.m. in the Lincoln Sudbury Regional High School auditorium.
All right, does that receive a second? It does. Mr. Grossberg, you're recognized in support of your motion.
Thank you. We are honored to present to you this evening. We are moving. Why are we moving to postpone consideration of Article 4? As Mr. Moderator explained, this is a little unique circumstance, and I'd like to explain it to you. But budget and tax matters are never really easy to talk about. FinCom believes, above all else, an informed voter is essential to our town's democracy.
Thanks, Gary.
What I'd like to walk through this evening is a brief overview of our basis for recommendations for postponing Article 4. And the way I'd like to approach it is to talk briefly about the role of the FinCom, because this is really the only time all year that we get to speak to most of you who we serve. The goals of the FinCom for the year that were set forth in the fall, timeline of the budget process, key issues that were encountered in fiscal year 04's planning, and a high-level discussion of the FY04 budget, which we're not taking up this evening at this point, and decisions and strategies for the fiscal year 04 budget, and then our recommendation to town meeting. As many of you know, the FinCom is part of the legislative branch of our government, mandated to advise town meeting on all financial matters. We have oversight responsibility, but we do not make executive policy making or management of town operations or schools. Our role in the budget process is to develop and issue budget guidelines, which we did this fall, review town and school budgets in the context of the town as a whole, and ensure a balanced budget. At the end of the year, the FinCom needs to report to you in the form of the warrant, FinCom report in the back of the warrant, and above all else, the document needs to be clear and meaningful, explain to you all the financial issues facing you. This fall, in order to achieve the mandate, we put forth four goals. The four goals are to listen to voters, facilitating views through talking with voters, understanding financial issues that affect the citizens. Two, to communicate with town departments and schools, facilitating views and the perspectives of voters to the town departments and schools, foster constructive communication between Finance Committee liaisons and the town departments and schools throughout the year. Three, to listen to the town departments and the schools. During the Finance Committee budget hearings and through dialogue during the year between the FinCom liaisons and the selectmen, superintendents, town manager, and the department heads, to thoroughly understand the budget. And then finally, to make recommendations regarding the overall budget within the framework of the town needs and revenues. And then, as we're doing tonight, is to communicate back to voters. And this also happens during the year. And this is to communicate the budget and other financial matters effectively to you, the voter, through the written finance committee report, through verbal communication at town meeting, and through the use of video and electronic medium. This slide is very difficult to read, but it gives a flavor of the timetable that we set forth. In fact, you probably need a telescope to see it. But it gives you an appreciation of the schedule that we started working on in the fall. And it starts in basically October 1st, which is the kickoff, doing the FinCom forums, or the FinCom roadshow that we called it, and going out and talking to people early on in the year.
Mike, still on it. Can we get the lights down a little bit so that slide may be a little more visible? Does that make it a little better? It's actually an eye chart.
So we start the process in the fall, setting forth the budget guidelines and doing the FinCom roadshow, which we go out to various constituents and talk about the budget process that we see early in the year. In early January and into February, we go through the hearing process that most of you are familiar with, and the culmination of those efforts is putting together the budget package together with the town manager's office, and then finally coming together in town meeting and recommending a budget. Some of the key issues for fiscal year 04, among many that were encountered, are the outcome of ongoing multi-year contract negotiations, which are currently being determined, increasing benefit costs in excess of 15% over the prior year, monitoring of major construction projects, reduction in aid from the Commonwealth, and discussions of an override, revenues versus operating needs. Without getting into the FY04 budget, we wanted to briefly give you an overview of some of the drivers. And I'll be deferring to the town manager and Representative Pope to talk about some of these in detail. But the overview is that the budget printed in the warrant, as you see it, represents virtually a 0% increase in operating spend across the town and the schools. It excludes capital projects and other debt service and investments, and it also contemplates a 10% reduction in aid from the Commonwealth. This doesn't contemplate, and we'll get into this, another possible 10% or more reduction in state aid. How will the state funding affect us? Well, it's important to understand what the revenue sources to the town and schools are from. Obviously, a major revenue reduction from the state may affect towns that don't have the percentage of revenue coming from their property taxes or you, the citizens, versus the state. Here in Sudbury, 76% of revenue comes from you, the voter, through property taxes, and only 13% comes from the state, but it still will have a significant impact if it does drop. So you ask, can we achieve a balanced budget? Current estimates indicate a further revenue shortfall of approximately $1 million, which represents a 1.9% reduction in our budget. The question will become, can we enable sustaining services? Final numbers from the Commonwealth may not be finalized before fiscal year begins. Override scenarios need to be examined, and the outcome of collective bargaining needs to be studied. So we find ourselves at a historic moment. Many of you have already heard about this. We've talked about three scenarios. The first scenario would be to vote on Article 4 that appears in the warrant as it is, and which would likely require a special town meeting later to balance the budget because of some of the things I talked about before, that being the reduction in state aid. Scenario B would be to choose a motion to lower the budget through an amendment and vote based on what we believe as a committee are unknown estimates and could be arbitrary. And finally, C is to postpone voting until the budget becomes clearer in May. So what is the Finance Committee's recommendation to you, the voter? Our recommendation is to support a motion to postpone voting on the FY04 budget until May 21st in order to give the FinCom time to advise you on local aid numbers, the impact on town and school services through the hearing process, and enabling the town and schools to still plan for the upcoming fiscal year. I might note that this requires two-thirds approval by town meeting. Now I'd like to turn this over to Lauren Valenti, the town manager, and Representative Sue Pope, and then I'll come back just to wrap up.
Thank you, Mike, and good evening. I won't take very much of your time, just to augment a few points as to why we believe that postponing until the date May 21st will really help us in terms of trying to get a good budget in place for the town. There is a slideshow postponement. No, it should look like this. Your first slide. Just postponement option. No, that's my. Looks like we don't have it. I'll just do talking points. Thank you. Some of the things that I mainly wanted to focus on is what happened to local aid and why local aid is so important this year, seemingly more important than in previous years, for our ability to get to a balanced budget. A year ago this time, we had zero new revenues and huge increases in fixed costs as we started off looking at budgeting. Whatever happened in state aid was only going to be a small part of this bigger problem we had. This year, when we started budgeting, we had some new revenue. We had a little $1.2 million something in new revenue, and our fixed costs weren't as horribly increasing as they were in the previous year. And I think once the Finance Committee looked at it and the Board of Selectmen and I looked at it, we saw an opportunity to be able to bring a budget that would not require an override to town meeting this year. It required, though, very, very more precise revenue calculations than we've ever had to do in the past. One of the key ones to look at was what was going to happen with local aid. We discussed with everyone we knew, with our legislators, with other local officials, with the Mass Municipal Association, everything we could look at, and from the information available to us, 10% became the number that we should look at in reducing our local aid. We could have been more conservative. We could have said 15% and assumed another $300,000 or $400,000 loss. But that would have triggered us into a different situation. We felt this was the best way to go until we at least received the governor's budget. When we got the governor's budget, though, and at first I was relieved. The word I got was, no town's taken more than a 10.5% reduction. And the relief we felt was so great that we had hit this nail on the head, that we had a budget. The revenue that was going to support it, we had a no-override budget, although it was a zero-growth budget, it was still one that we could all live with then. When the governor's budget was released, it turned out that it was 10% plus a number of other grants, most specifically in regional in school transportation, were also not funded. So just looking at what the governor proposed in his budget, we have a $357,000 problem between being in balance. If that was the only problem, we could have rolled up our sleeves and gotten to work and still come to you with a balanced budget. But what we know is going to happen is the House and the Senate are going to be taking up the budget too. And the word that we've been advised at, and Representative Sue Pope is here Fintola about the timetable that they'll work under is that the cuts could be even more devastating, and to the town of Sudbury, not $350,000, we could have a maximum of $950,000 to $1 million loss over the state aid number we've used to balance our budget. Another troubling aspect in terms of trying to get motions and appropriations right is that the governor has proposed changing the destination of Chapter 70 money. Chapter 70 money, for those of you that pay attention and watch from year to year under ed reform, is the money towns and cities received to try to help the towns and the schools live with the mandates of the ed reform and support education. You keep hearing that again. You know, education is number one. We got to support education. But not only was Chapter 70 to the Lincoln Sudbury Regional High School and the Sudbury Public Schools cut significantly, 23% of the Sudbury Public Schools, I think 47%, something like that, to the regional high school, the governor in his budget said, let's give it to the town first, and then the town will pass it on to the regional high school. Why does that matter? In your warrant, if you look, we vote an assessment to the high school. If the money goes to the high school first, they net that out of their approved budget, and the assessment is the difference. If the money comes to us first, the assessment needs to be higher to allow us to pass that Chapter 70 money over to the regional high school. It's even worse with Minuteman. I don't even want to go into tonight the problems that have been created for the Minuteman. I think they took somewhere, and I don't have the exact number, like a 70% cut in Chapter 70 and what's going to happen with their budget. We'd like to be able to, when we discuss the budget, have an indication of where is that Chapter 70 money going to lie, end up. Is it going to end up at the high schools? Is it going to end up at the town? So we can vote the right appropriation in the right destination, the right assessment, I'm sorry. To give you a sense of the impact for Lincoln Sudbury High School, it could be a swing of as much as $1,800,000. So we do want to get that right. Third, we want to know what the long-term picture is going to be. The governor's budget, troublingly enough, also brought us to 10.5%, in his words, with the use of something called transitional mitigation aid. $1.8 million of what we're going to receive under his scenario may not be there in 05 or may start being stepped down. If the long-term implications from the Commonwealth are that we have been living on $1.8 million too much money, it changes our perspective. We need, for sustainability and multi-year reasons, to consider a new plan. However, if they go back to the old formulas and start looking again, that changes our perspective too. Insight in that, I think, will really help us as we try to finalize budget plans for 04. Briefly, what are some of the advantages that we see as postponement? Again, it allows time to get the appropriation amounts closer to the available revenue. It allows time to get the assessments for the regional high schools in the right place, in the right amount. It avoids town meeting taking votes right now on appropriations that we know are too high and can't be sustained. It allows us time to evaluate the options with better information. If you agree tonight to allow us to postpone till May 21st, what will we be doing? We will continue to plan for the worst-case scenario. We will start planning immediately for that $1 million loss and how we would be able to deal with that. We would look at what sort of cuts are necessitated by that across all the cost centers. Where and how would you do these cuts? It would allow you, the residents and voters, time to see the cuts and services from this worst-case level. We would, again, through all the different types of media, try to make it clear to you where we're reducing services and budget lines, how and what we're losing in doing that. And it would allow us to wait for the news from the state legislature in April. If we don't have any postponement, what will happen? Well, the town will end up with an unbalanced budget, and the selectmen will be forced to call a special town meeting so that we can do it. When will we have that special town meeting? Perhaps May 21, because we have to get a balanced budget before June 30. So if we don't have, whatever actions we take tonight, we're almost guaranteed to have an unbalanced budget. So this would be the fallback plan. Under that scenario, if we don't postpone tonight, our planning will still be the same. We still have to go forward, assuming a $1 million cut. Finance Committee still has to have a process to see how we do that. We will still wait for the late April news about what is happening. Finally, I would say, why May 21? Because that allows for the schedule of the state legislature, as far as we can tell, to continue forward. At this point, I'd like to ask the moderator if I may introduce Representative Susan Pope, and she's going to, we hope, fill in the last piece of information about you. What will change between now and May 21st? What information can we expect to have? And for that, we're all going to look to Beacon Hill and see what what happened to our state legislature. And we'd like to ask her if she could just tell you briefly about that timetable. Mr. Moderator?
Representative Pope? Because Representative Pope is not a resident of our town, she needs the consent of the hall to address us. I assume she has it. Thank you. Representative Pope, you are most welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Moderator, I think. Before I begin, I would like to just add my appreciation and thanks to Clay and June Allen. Wonderful that you got that award tonight, Clay. I know it's a rare occasion when you can ride through Sudbury and not see you and June at a heater piece planting or at the Hosmer House doing something, so that's very nice. That's the good part of my evening. I have to say that I don't have a lot of definitive answers to give you tonight. I am here to tell you that I am in support of you postponing the budget part of your town meeting until May, and I'll tell you why. On April 23rd, the House Ways and Means budget comes out. Now, as you know, you have the governor's budget, which we've gotten. We also have the House Ways and Means budget and the Senate Ways and Means budget coming out. The House comes out on the 23rd, so does the Senate, and you know that the Senate and the House will never agree on anything. It will then go to a conference committee. The House is prepared to debate the budget the first 2 weeks in May, starting, I believe it's May 5th. The Senate will get it the following week. We are committed to having our budgets in place before the fiscal year begins on July 1st. That's all I can tell you what we're doing. We don't know exactly how the budgets are going to come out. I do know that the rumblings from the chairman of the Ways and Means in the House has said that he is expecting or going to ask for perhaps a 20% cut in local aid. That has had many ramifications among the members. No one is ready to add another 20% cut. I don't know whether we're being positioned to give you the worst case scenario. I know I've been in contact with Maureen all through this budget cycle and with the Board of Selectmen so that they know where we are, and we don't always know where we are either, but the town has been alerted. As I say, the 20% cut is beyond comprehension. I don't believe it's going to be that bad. I think they like to tell you, but as a conservative, I am going to put out the 20%. But the timeline, we won't know anything until April 23rd when the budget comes out. And I'm sorry, but that's all I can tell you. But I do agree that because of that time frame, that you are in a good position and you should be postponing your budget hearing until the town meeting until the 21st. And I know I've been in contact with Senator Pam Reeser. She unfortunately was not able to come tonight. She is speaking at her town meeting in Acton, and I'm going to leave here and give the good news to my town meeting in Wayland. So that's where we're at, and I know, Maureen, you and I will be in contact almost daily on this. I don't know if there are any questions or if I can answer any questions. Everything is in flux. We have never seen a year like this, or at least I have never seen a year like this. But we are determined to have a budget on time this year. So thank you, Mr. Moderator, for letting me address the audience tonight.
And Representative Poe, thank you for taking time from what I know is a very busy schedule to help us out with this matter. We appreciate it very much.
And finally, I'd just like to conclude by saying that if anybody has any questions at all after this evening, or if we do pass this article between now and the 21st, to please contact the FinCom.
The selectmen wish to address this motion.
Mr. Moderator, the selectmen support this motion. We have had, for those of you that are viewers of Channel 8, a few meetings in the last 2 weeks that have been attended by representatives, and in most cases the entire boards of the LS School Committee, the Cates-Wade School Committee, the FinCom, and the Board of Selectmen. There is unanimous support for the continuation of town meeting to May 21st. And the mere fact that we will need to have another meeting, gathering of this body to settle the budget, be it by continuation of this meeting or by the calling of a special town meeting, either way, we're not in a position to put a balanced budget forward this evening. So we urge your support for the motion that's been made by the FinCom.
Okay. Does anyone else wish to be heard on the motion? Yes, sir.
Thomas Holliker, Concord Road, 623. I wish to speak against this motion. I don't want another town meeting. I don't want an override, and I don't want another election that would be associated with the override. There's a time and place to consider the yearly budget, and that's now, April 7th. And I don't quite understand the position of the finance officers. It seems to me that if we pass a budget and the money is not there, you just won't be able to spend it. You just have to tighten your belt. I don't see how things are much more complicated than that. I don't see why we can't pass the budget tonight, and if the state gives up on us, why, we'll just have to tighten our belt. You know, times are hard everywhere. Hard for business, hard for the state, hard for the nation. And it's tough for a lot of individuals here in Sudbury. It seems to me that we have to make do with what we have. If we have to go through a year where the growth is negative in our budget, there's nothing wrong with that. It would be difficult, but it's not catastrophic. Also, you know, different people can make different recommendations about how to save money in the budget. For example, I can tell you that if interscholastic sports at the high school were entirely self-supporting next year, you could save of the order of $350,000.
Be heard on the motion to postpone. Mr. Coe?
Mr. Moderator, Robert Coe, 14 Churchill Street. I support the motion to postpone, and with respect to what the previous speaker said, I'd like to point out that if we pass a budget that turns out to be greater than the amount of revenue, then where the cuts get made to accommodate the lesser revenue is no longer in the control of the town meeting. I think that if the previous speaker would think it over, he might decide that maybe that wasn't such a great idea.
Yes, ma'am.
Judy Deutsch from Concord Road. I'm one of what I heard Representative Pope say was that on May 5th and May 12th, the two houses of the legislature would begin debating the budget, and that they didn't have to have the budget in till July 1st, I think it was. Now, I'm wondering what we're going to do on May 21st when and if we come back together again and find that, as usual, the state budget hasn't been decided upon. Are we going to postpone this again? What are your plans, Finance Committee, Town Manager, Board of Selectmen?
Pick one.
I want to hear from all you three. I know you've all worked hard, and it's not simple.
Thank you. I think that's a good question. Is this on? Am I heard? What we're going on is, as Representative Pope said, on April 23rd, we will know the House budget. And then from everything we've been told, and again, I understand people saying in a year that's been as crazy as this one and it's hard to believe anything, That will be the worst case scenario, that the House budget will be as bad as it's going to get. All that will happen from there on out is that the House and Senate will debate. Maybe it's less, maybe it's moved around, something like that. But again, both from senators and from representatives and from the group that I belong to, the Mass Municipal Association the town belongs to, we're advised that given about the end of April, we should have a sense of, one, how bad it's going to be, and two, if they are going to go back and adhere to the old formulas where the money would come to the regional high school instead of to the town. That's half the battle, knowing that. If we get to May 21st and it's not done, we will have gained, you know, 6 more weeks to try to figure out how to do these cuts for the worst-case scenario, which we had very limited time from the time that the news came after the governor's budget was delivered, and then the immediate response from the state legislature is there's a lot the governor's proposed that we don't think is going to happen. If those savings aren't there, we have to look elsewhere. We will look to local aid and reduce that further. So I think that we will have not perfect information, but a lot more. And if I might add just clarification on the appropriations question, when we go to set the tax rate, we need to have our appropriations right. We can't just underspend. We can't underspend our appropriation, and I don't know if people are aware. We do that every year and revert money back to the budget at the end of the year. Certainly we can do that. But it's the voted appropriations that have to be correct to move us through the whole process. And so we can't just go with, you know, any year saying let's just vote a real high number and spend less. We do have to have those legal caps at the right place.
Yes, sir. Ivan Lubash, 25 Barbara Road. I have really what is a rhetorical question known as passing the buck. Our federal government and state leaders take pride in announcing that they are reducing taxes. The federal government bounces it to the state. The state bounces it down, and unfortunately, we, the residents, have no one to bounce it to. Is there any way we can bounce the cost back?
Anyone else wish to be heard on Article 4 of the motion?
Yes, sir, I do. I'd like to be heard. This is Mike Rubin, 45 Surrey Lane. If we don't pass this budget, what will that mean to the subsequent articles that call for funding things out of public works, public safety, the sewers, the street lights, and things like that?
Mr. Moderator, the other articles are for the most part self-funding. They've brought a separate set of funding with them. The only ones that would be affected by this, Article 4 is sort of encapsulated. It's all in one. And all the revenue that's needed to support all the appropriations are taken care of and balanced there and are not used in any other part of it. So we're encouraging that we just postpone taking up Article 4, that all the rest of the financial articles, et cetera, can go forward because they have a separate set of revenue that doesn't depend on Article 4.
Yes, sir.
Kerry Lynn, 164 Maynard Farm Road. I also have a question, and that is, what will be the mechanism to communicate the results of your further planning to the town in advance of the next meeting?
I can speak on behalf of the Finance Committee that will be conducting hearings once again to determine the impact of any cut in state aid in looking at the town departments and the schools in the context of the town as a whole.
Mr. Moderator, in addition to Mr. Grossberg's comments to the gentleman that asked the question for the mechanism, beyond public hearings, obviously the Board of Selectmen will be in attendance. If the cuts are severe enough and the reductions are drastic enough that the decision becomes necessary for the consideration of an override, that decision is the responsibility of the Board of Selectmen, and we will certainly be having discussions, meetings, and hearings to that effect as well. And all of this information can be tracked on the town's website, as well as meeting schedules that are posted when any meetings are going to be held by any of the various boards and committees in town.
I'm wondering if the question isn't being over-answered. I got the feeling that what maybe the inquiry was, Mr. O'Brien, and maybe the selectmen are the ones who have to answer this, is there any plan to mail out what amounts to a mailing equivalent of a warrant to people so that when they arrive here at town meeting, they'll have been able to lead the new budget over or at least have a handout. I, as a moderator, hope there will at least be a handout that people will have in their hands before they get here.
The town manager informs me that that is possible and that it would most likely be a one- or two-page sheet summation.
Yes, sir.
James Gardner, 4 Longfellow Road. I have a procedural question also. If I understand this correctly, you would, at the end of whatever time we take the town meeting this week, you would suspend the town meeting until May 21st if this motion is approved. If you do that and we meet back here on May 21st, what's the impact on other questions that are the warrants that are already, articles that are already in the warrant? For example, there are several articles that the Sudbury Housing Authority has said that they are planning to indefinitely postpone. Could they come back on May 21st and move to reconsider those articles? Also, whatever the final night this week is for articles to be considered, would there be an opportunity for motions to reconsider all of those articles also on May 21st?
The answer to your question, it's a matter of procedure, and so the moderator will address it for you. If a matter is indefinitely postponed under the tradition in Sudbury, which governs us, as well as the manual, that article is essentially dead. It can't come back until a special end. With respect to reconsideration, our reconsideration bylaw is somewhat complicated, but it's essentially this. The only way things can be reconsidered in Sudbury is if the reconsideration motion is brought in the same session, that is the same evening when the action was first taken, a two-thirds vote of the hall can give you reconsideration. If you don't do it then, you must, in other words, if you decide to reconsider after the session has ended, you have until noon of the day following the session to file with the town clerk a written request for reconsideration, which must be signed by, help me out here, Barbara, is it 15 voters who were present at the meeting. Then that is given to the moderator, who announces it at the next session, and the matter is then up for the question of whether it will be reconsidered at the following session or as the last order of business of that session, if it be the final session, and a two-thirds vote of the hall would be required to pass it. The only other way you can get reconsideration of a matter decided at town meeting is the unanimous vote of the hall. I hope that hasn't come too quickly, but I think I've explained the full procedure there.
That sounds like what's in the book.
Yeah.
I guess the question is if...
I'm that way. I go by the book.
If the day after the last meeting this week, people by noon the next day put together the 15 signatures to reconsider, would there be a way to publicize that in advance of May 21st?
Well, I assume that if that happened, the town crier would probably run an article. But in any event, what would happen is on the 21st, I would announce as a formal matter that that had taken place and that I was planning to take up the question of whether it would be reconsidered either. Causing me problems. I would at that point say that we will either vote on that as the last order of business on the 21st if we otherwise finish the warrant, or as the first order of business the next night if we don't finish the warrant. So it would be just handled in the same sequence, it just would be many days apart.
Thank you.
And I'm sorry to keep dropping this gavel. You know, this gavel, it might interest you. A predecessor of mine said, when you hold the gavel, you hold 300 years of history in its hands. This gavel is a rather remarkable instrument. If you've never seen it, it has chips of wood from things like the White House and the Gettysburg Battlefield and all kinds of things. It was made for the town. It's quite an instrument. And I'm very upset I'm dropping it here. And what's happened is that who's ever doing the sound, I'd like a mic that doesn't have a bass tomorrow night. Anyone else want to be heard on this motion to postpone? I see no one. All those in favor of the motion to postpone Article 4 until May 21, please indicate by raising your cards. All those opposed. Madam Clerk, it is not quite unanimous, but it is clearly well over two-thirds. It passes.
Article 5, the fiscal year 404 solid waste disposal budget, submitted by the Finance Committee. Vote required on a main motion under this article would be a majority vote. Recognize Ms. Billig for the motion.
Thank you, sir. Move to appropriate the sum of $214,459 for the Solid Waste Enterprise Fund for the fiscal year 2004, and further to authorize use of an additional $21,791 of Enterprise Fund receipts for indirect costs. Such sums to be raised by $236,250 in receipts of the Enterprise.
Does that receive a second?
It does.
Do you wish to be heard in support of the motion, Ms. Billig?
The FinCom recommends approval of this motion.
All right. Schlachtman?
Couldn't hear you, Mr. Yudzinski. I think you need to pull a switch or something, John.
Thank you, Mr. Moderator.
We need to fire up the mic in front of Mr. Dubinsky, our senior selectman.
Almost 60.
Well, it had nothing to do with almost 60. It has to do with 18 years in office.
I want to select and support this article.
Thank you. Anyone else wish to be heard of the motion under Article 5? I see no one. All those in favor of the motion under Article 5, please indicate by raising your cards. Any opposed? Motion passes unanimously. Article 6, the fiscal year 04 pool enterprise fund budget, submitted by the FinCom. Ms. Billig, motion.
Move to appropriate the sum of $395,375 for the pool enterprise fund for fiscal year 2004, and further to authorize use of an additional $45,981 of enterprise fund received for indirect costs. Such sums to be raised from $441,356 in receipts of the enterprise.
All right, does that receive a second? It does. I feel like the FinCom obviously supports this. Do you have anything to add?
Nothing to add.
Selectman? I mean, like Mr. Dubinsky.
Thank you, Mr. Moderator. Board of Selectmen urges for this article.
Thank you. Anyone else wish to be heard on the motion under Article 6? Yes, sir.
Thomas Holliker, 623 Concord Road. This is a question. Does this motion imply that the pool is still not self-supporting? Or is it in fact now self-supporting?
I believe the Park and Rec Commission has a presentation to support this motion that may help explain some of the background and financial issues.
Park and Rec want to be heard in this? Are they here? Yes, sir.
Mr. Moderator, this is Dennis Pony from Sudbury Park and Recreation Commission. I'll be a quick presentation here just to kind of highlight some of those questions that have been coming up. First is we have emittance statistical analysis. Our team had was brought in about July. Our whole team was brought in to really take a look at the whole big picture of the pool. And one of the things we did right away was get a whole computer system together, be able to track some of the financial and some of the emittance controls that we do have. So as you can see from our graph up here, in July, we really started to really track a lot of the different emittance, and it's been steadily going up. You can see a little bit of dip in there just before the swim team. And all of a sudden it shoots back up again, and currently we're exceeding last year's projections of emittances. So as you can see, we're really starting to increase those. Our next slide. Based on that graph, our calendar year, which was 02, there was 37,126 units of service. That's actual units of service delivered at the Atkinson Pool. Calendar year 2003, to date, which is as of Friday's data, put this together, 19,501 units of service. So if you really take a look at the actual fiscal year, you take from July 1 to right now, we actually have 45,308 units of service. So if you take the picture of the pool, 45,000 units of service have come through that turnstile since July 1st. I think that's pretty amazing. And to keep that pool up and running, and our staff does an excellent job. So just wanted to give some statistics on actually on the annual analysis. The next slide gives you our daily pass summary. This actually gives you a snapshot of all the passes that we do sell. We do sell quite a bit, all the different ways you can utilize the pool. But this kind of gives you a breakout by who's using the pool and what they're paying for a daily pass. So a daily adult, we have 18%. A daily youth resident, we have 30%. Daily seniors, we have 2%. Daily youth non-resident, 15%. And that was daily adult. And daily youth, we have 19%. So it's pretty much, we're servicing the people of the community and some of the surrounding communities. So I think that's important thing to look at. And that generates some money also. Our membership demographics. Well, we have memberships, and we also have different ways of doing memberships. We have 395 memberships. That equates to 742 members. Okay? As you can see, our family membership is one of our highest ones that we do utilize, and that's the most one that's profitable. Our next slide.
Mr. Bononi, I don't mean to interrupt you, but the question of the voter was, is the pool self-supporting, yes or no?
Okay, we will flip to slide. FY03 budget. Unfortunately, I can't change the past. And what we're doing right now is, we have a couple of main revenue sources. We have swim team rental, pool rental, memberships, daily passes, swim lessons, pool programming, and miscellaneous. To date, our benchmark is $350,000 for FY03 budget. As of right now, today's date, we have $255,000 in the books. So that means by June 30th, we need to come up with a little less than $100,000. So we're on pace, we're on track to meet our goal for this year. And I have every confidence in my staff and myself that we will meet our goal for next year. Our ending thoughts. We believe we're on a good path. Capital and grant money needed, however, for maintenance and some improvements there. Atkinson Pool is an asset to this town. It's used by quite a bit of people, as I previously discussed. The motion before you plans for self-sufficiency without tax support. We urge you to support this article for funding the Atkinson Pool. Thank you so much.
Gentleman right here.
Mr. Moderator?
Yes, sir.
I'd like to say something.
Go right ahead.
Levine Dutton Road. The pool is used by tiny tots and senior citizens and is indicated by many thousands of people. The town has seen fit to tear down the Curtis Middle School to establish two baseball fields, which have yet been used. The town has bought $10 million worth of land, which is hardly used. And the pool is widely used, and it can be supported by this town, and I see no reason why tax dollars should not be used to maintain and support the pool.
Elaine Barnard, Goldstein, 40 Indian Ridge Road. I just have a question. What is the difference between an enterprise fund budget and a revolving fund?
Maureen, who wants to take a shot at that one?
I'll do my best, and my finance people can correct me if I get it wrong. Enterprise funds are set up to almost mimic private sector businesses. They are supposed to be completely self-supporting, including all the costs of the benefits of the employees and all the maintenance and everything else associated with it. In theory, they are supposed to do that. Some and the activities within it are completely, the benefits completely accrue to the user and not to the community at large. Services that lend themselves to enterprise funds, trash pickup, water, sewer, a variety of things like that, where the user can use the amounts they choose, and the amount they pay depends on the amount that they of the service they consume. to be able to do that. Revolving funds, on the other hand, are sort of added on to an existing operation. For instance, we have a recreation department that is supported, and then there's activities they're meant to recover all the costs of what they do, but don't necessarily have to. There can be multiple activities. You can run multiple programs, and all the revenue come into the revolving fund, and then they pay more or less the direct costs on that. And I would ask Sue or Carrie if I've missed anything under the revolving fund, what they would add to that. It's just the difference of self-sufficiency that they are supposed to have, and whether or not they're considered sort of add-on to an entity that's already there. For instance, our youth commission, youth coordinator is there paid by tax money. She can run different activities and run it, have a revolving fund just to collect the fees and spend for a bus trip, a one-time type of thing. But it's not an ongoing activity that's supposed to support staff.
I might add that if you refer to page FC45 and 46, if you're anything like me and you need to visually see it, the definition is in the glossary of budget terms and definitions.
Anyone else? Yes, ma'am.
Hello. My name is Melina Murphy, and I live at 261 Willis Road. I'm here in support of the pool. I think it's a wonderful place. We are family members, and my oldest son is 8, a member of the swim team. I have 2 other children who are looking forward to being on the team. The staff is fabulous. They taught my 3-year-old to do laps at the pool. I just can't say enough positive things about the staff. The pool is such an asset to our entire community. I met a senior this winter who told me he raised his family here in town. His children are now adults and moved on to faraway places. And he just started swimming at the pool. I can't believe he just started now. So I hope you all support the pool. Even if you don't use the pool, you should try it, because I think, like the senior who I met this winter, found that he loves being there. Thank you.
Anyone else wish to be heard on this motion?
Just me.
Yes.
Kathy Lifshultz, 50 Austin Road, and I just want to echo the same sentiments and those of my son and his fellow friends. My son took the initiative to put together a little petition for fear that his favorite place to go for recreation would be somewhat maybe closed down. He wrote these words that I think that echo all those of his friends and those who signed this. He asked the kids at the Curtis Middle School to sign it, and he gathered in just one day, essentially, 144 signatures of his fellow students, all in support of the town pool. And he wrote, if I could just mention, that we, the students of Ephraim Curtis Middle School, are signing this petition to show our great support for the Atkinson Pool. We hope that you who think that Atkinson Pool should be closed will change your minds and think about all the people who enjoy learning to swim there and how many people benefit from the generous programs there. Also, if the pool falls, so will the Sudbury swim team. Then those who attend swimming practices or meets there will be very disappointed. Please keep one of the greatest facilities in Sudbury from closing. Thank you for your consideration.
Thank you.
Yes, sir.
Tom Hollicker, Concord Road. I asked the question because of a recollection concerning discussions at the time that the Atkins Pool was initially funded and constructed. My recollection, perhaps it's incorrect, I can stand to be corrected in this recollection, but is that the pool was expected to be self-supporting at some point in time. If in the wisdom of the town it should not be self-supporting and should be supported by public funds, that's all right by me, but I would like some clarification as to my initial question. I gather it's not self-supporting currently. And also, maybe a little comment on the past history of this. Is it still the intention that this pool become self-supporting, or has that been abandoned?
Thank you, Mr. Moderator. I'll try to take up some of those questions. I'm not sure of the long-term history, to be honest. I know that I have been told the intention was to set it up as an enterprise fund. It was presented that way to the town. The town engaged in it, for that matter. They set up a plan to arrive at that and successfully did, and up to about 2001, I believe, they were in the black. They were adding to the retained earnings, and things looked like the long-term plan was going well. About that time, two major things started to happen. One had to do, and we keep referring to it again and again, extraordinary cost increases in benefits, the cost of benefits. And because we pay the benefits for the individuals who work at the pool out of the pool's earnings, suddenly here was one major cost that, as I said earlier or mentioned or whatever, I mean, our town revenues are going up maybe $1 million themselves from the 2.5, and benefits are going up that whole amount. That's the rate of increase in benefits right now. So they got hit with that. The other is that we had been charging all of the cost of utilities for Fairbanks Center to the pool, the enterprise fund. Perhaps I should not have been. That was just a setup when I got there. We've recently found out that due to a meter change in the gas, we've been paying double amount of gas. And heating a pool and heating that operation is very expensive. We already know we have $18,000 in credits coming from the least smaller provider of utilities there. So that's been going on for the past year and a half, 2 years. The long and the short of it is we're hopeful it can be brought back to fully self-supporting. What happened the last couple of years, although the plan was for it to be self-supporting, at the end of the year it ran a deficit, and that was what raised on what we call the recap. That is, when we set the tax rate, we had to cover that deficit, so it was unintentionally, we didn't plan it to be covered by the taxes for the town. What Dennis laid out for you is a plan, and we're monitoring carefully to bring it back to self-sufficiency. But if we can't, then our plan is to bring it back to the town and say, what level of support do you want to offer it from the levy? We think because there's so many other demands on the levy, it makes sense if it can, because the benefits do accrue to the users, to keep it in the enterprise fund and keep supporting it that way. But should we not be able to get there, I think our intention is not to say that's the end of the pool, then to bring it back to the town and discuss again, what do we want to do with this wonderful asset in the town? And I think that's what our intention is over the next year or two, to bring that back to the town, should we not be able to get it back self-sufficiently. Right now, our intentions are that we can do that. And the plans for 04 are, it is voted as a self-supporting, without tax support article that we're discussing here.
Wait a minute. Gentleman here.
Peter Buxton.
If you have a question, please get to a microphone.
Peter Buxton, 19 Chanticleer Road. In 1985, I was on the committee, five committees. There were design, layout, budget, et cetera, to put the pool together. History is only useful if it's instructive. It was very, very basic back then, which we didn't know about in some of the other committees. When the budget was submitted to the town, it was submitted with only the direct operating costs as the budget, and everything was built around that, i.e., no reservations for depreciation were ever included in that budget, and that's a severe impairment still today. And no indirect costs were put into that budget back then. So those have been burdens all this time. In the years 1997, the pool had a surplus of $14,000. It was self-sufficient that year. In 98, it was plus $28,000. In 99, it was plus $22,000 to accumulate $64,000 in surplus. The heating and the HVAC system, the air conditioning system down there, failed after 12 years of use, but no accumulation for depreciation, which every normal business uses, failed, and it was $44,000 in cost that was used. So therefore, $64,000 in retained earnings went to $20,000. The following year, there was a deficit, and that was paid for by the remainder of the retained earnings. And then came the last 2 years, and I haven't been involved in the last couple of years, but we've had some deficits, and they've been covered here as they are being voted on tonight by tax levy. So it's the impairment, the enterprise fund is tricky. when you are plus $64,000 in surplus, it's tough to go tell the members we want to raise the fees. You're in a surplus. But when all of a sudden you get a hit, you should have been raising fees during that time period ready for downturns, and that was never done. So now there was a rush to increase the fees quickly. That depressed the membership. So there's a number of things going on. As far as what's happened over time, though, I looked at it, and I think there's been an average of about, over 15 years, about $10,000 or $15,000 per year average. 170 of that occurred in the first two or three years of the $300,000, $400,000 worth of total deficits. So people don't like to hear me say this when I say it, but this is the only thing in town that is under the enterprise system other than the transfer station. Now, if you took the library, now this is heresy and I don't advocate it, but if you just took the library and said, let's put it in an enterprise fund, it would lose $700,000 a year except for repayments of late fees. So if you did that, but you aren't going to do that. So this is a terrific asset, and it ought to be supported, and you've got to find a way to cover those depreciation costs and make sure that the people of town understand this. I have the tab newspaper over there from 1992, Town Pool Drowning, and it was the same issue, and it hasn't changed in 15 years, and we've got to fix it so we don't end up with this annual hassle. So I think it's a terrific asset. I watch Dennis Manone. I'm chairman of the Athletic Field Committee, and I work with him a lot. This guy has got it. He's got it on track, and he's working like heck to make this thing work. So I have every confidence that this thing is going to go well. It ain't going to be easy, but he's the guy who can pull it together. Thank you.
Anyone else wish to be heard on the motion under Article 6? I see no one. All those in favor of the motion under Article 6, please indicate by raising your cards. All those opposed? Motion passes unanimously. Okay. Article 7, the fiscal year 04 capital budget, submitted by the Capital Improvement Planning Committee. Recognize Dave Wallace. David here? There you are, David. For a motion.
I move to appropriate the sum of $40,000 for remodeling, reconstructing, and making extraordinary repairs to town fire stations consisting of the installation of air exchange systems, said sum to be raised by transfer from unexpended proceeds from the town's municipal purpose loan of 1997 bonds. Such proceeds relating to the portion of such bonds issued pursuant to the vote of the town passed April 4, 1995 under Article 19 for the purpose of constructing an addition and or renovating and making extraordinary repairs to the Goodnow Library, and that the Board of Selectmen is authorized to take any other action necessary to carry out this project.
Did I receive a second? Does. Mr. Wallace, you're recognized in support of your motion.
Thank you, Mr. Moderator. This is a fairly simple, straightforward motion. The Capital Improvement Committee considered a lot of necessary expenses, but as time has gone on, we recognize that there just isn't much money around. It's important to spend your money on capital items, not to let them deteriorate. And we thought that this is more than just symbolism. It's something that's really needed. And we do have the money. This article will fund the installation of point-of-source exhaust removal systems at stations number 2 and 3 to renovate or remove carcinogenic diesel exhaust from inside the buildings. This is a real hazard. It's been going on for years. And as people become more cognizant of indoor air pollution and the hazards thereof,
Chief Dunn feels that this is a very important item. In fact, he told us this is number one priority this year. In addition, to do this is absolutely necessary. It's required by OSHA. So we recommend this strongly. Thank you.
The Finance Committee supports this article.
The Board of Selectmen supports this article. This is a health and safety issue for fire personnel, and we feel as though the issue is urgent enough to support it. The Board of Selectmen realizes that this is a time for fiscal restraint. However, for safety reasons, we urge your support on this article.
Anyone else wish to be heard on the motion under Article 7? I see no one. All those in favor of the motion under Article 7, please indicate by raising your cards. Any opposed? Passes unanimously. Article 8, the ambulance purchase. Submitted by the fire chief, a vote required on the main motion under this article would be a majority vote. Recognize Chief Dunn.
Thank you, Mr. Moderator. This article was previously on the consent calendar at $140,000, and we took it off because we're going to lower the amount. Move to appropriate the sum of $130,000 for the purchase of an ambulance for the fire department, said sum to be raised by transfer from the ambulance reserve for appropriation account.
Does that receive a second? It does. Chief, do you have anything to add?
I'll just take questions, Mr. Moderator.
Okay. Finance Committee?
The Finance Committee recommends approval of this article.
Selectman, Mr. Javinsky.
Thank you, Mr. Moderator. The Board of Selectmen urge you to support this article.
All right. Anyone else have anything to say under Article 8?
Tom Hollicker, Concord Road. I was rather surprised to see in this article that your number one ambulance is only 5 years old and only has 50,000 miles on it. Seems to me that a vehicle of that sort should offer much better service than that. Is there some basic problem with this machine?
In addition to the mileage, it's not, Mr. Hall, there's a lot of engine miles on it. This thing sits at scene sometime for 20 minutes, half an hour, or longer before it does make the transport. It's the type of use it gets. It gets started and gets, floored as soon as it's going out the door. It's not something that we don't drive it the way people normally drive a car. That takes an extra toll on it. We try to keep the ambulance. It actually will stay with us for the next 5 years. So we're getting 10 years out of this ambulance. And it's in our procedure at the end of 5 years' life is to move it into the backup role so that by the time we get rid of it, it'll have 80,000 to 90,000 probably road miles, and then probably some extra the hours that are on that engine and the wear and tear on the vehicle. The money is available in the ambulance reserve for appropriation account. That's the money we collect from the insurance companies that pay for people that use the ambulance.
Anyone else wish to be heard on the motion on Article 8? Yes, sir.
Frank Reap, Newbridge Road. I was rather surprised to see an appropriation of this size in this year of such great austerity, particularly when we're wringing our hands as to whether we can even keep a swimming pool open. But I guess we did okay on that after all. But historically, over the years, the fire department has been treated very, very well by town meeting. We have built new fire stations. We have renovated fire stations. We must have the best equipped fire department in the state. I would certainly think in an age of austerity that we're in right now, we could just put such requisitions aside for a year or two until we can all breathe a little bit easier. Thank you.
Anyone else wish to be heard? Mr. Coe?
Mr. Moderator, I don't think there's anybody in this hall who would doubt my frugality. And
Mr. Coe, that's an understatement.
I hope you would treat it as such. There are very few people that I would in times like this, if they said that they needed the money and that it was being well spent, that I would necessarily accept that at face value without argument. Mike Dunn is one of them. And when he retires, it's going to cost the town money just because we don't have him to drive the price down on things that get bought for the fire department. I mean, as far as supporting the fire department so well, does everybody remember the $10,000 hook and ladder that he bought a few years ago? Lifted it off the town of Maynard. The new fire station on the Hudson Road came in well under budget, as I recall. I don't think that we're putting our $130,000 much at risk tonight.
Anyone else wish to be heard on the motion under Article 8?
Mr. Moderator?
Yes.
Just one point of clarification to make sure I understand. The money is coming out of a fund that can only be used for this purpose or other purposes related to the ambulance. If we don't spend it this year in the name of austerity, it will simply be there again next year, and we will have our primary ambulance continue to deteriorate and be in the shop and have repairs and things like that. So, again, to clarify from Article 4, this doesn't have anything to do with Article 4. It's a separate set of money that's used for a separate purpose. If we don't use it for this purpose, it'll sit there till next year.
Yes, sir.
Greg Topham, Dakin Road. As the town manager has just said, in the interest of public safety, having been recently in an accident in the town of Sudbury, this isn't coming out of tax levies. This is money that's reserved to buy a new ambulance. In the interest of public safety, please pass this article.
Anyone else wish to be heard on the motion under Article 8? I see no one. All those in favor of the motion under Article 8, please indicate by raising your cards. Any opposed? Motion carries.
Thank you.
Article 9, the Stabilization Fund, submitted by the Selectmen. A vote required on the main motion under this article would be a majority vote. Recognize Selectman Rapenian for a motion.
Thank you, Mr. Moderator. Move to indefinitely postpone Article 9.
All right, the motion is to indefinitely postpone Article 9. Does that receive a second? It does. Do you wish to be heard on the motion, Mr. Rapenian?
Thank you. With the budget situation, and given that all the cuts that have already been made, the board feels it is in the town's best interest to forego putting money into this fund for this upcoming fiscal year, but we do hope to resume putting money to that fund again in the future. The presence of a stabilization fund was one very key element mentioned in our AAA rating, just as an aside, so it was very positive for the town of Sudbury. Thank you.
Finance Committee?
The Finance Committee endorses this article.
Anyone else wish to be heard on the motion to indefinitely postpone Article 9? I see no one. All those in favor of the motion to indefinitely postpone Article 9, please indicate by raising your cards. All those opposed? The article is indefinitely postponed. Article 10, Street Acceptances. Submitted by the Selectmen, the vote required on a main motion under this article be a two-thirds vote. Recognize Selectman Rapinian.
Thank you. Move to accept the layout of the following ways. Lettery Circle from Woodside Road to a dead end, a distance of 945 feet more or less. South Meadow Drive from Knobscot Road to a dead end, a distance of 508 feet more or less. As laid out by the Board of Selectmen, in accordance with the descriptions and plans on file in the town clerk's office, to authorize the acquisition by purchase, by gift, or by a taking by eminent domain in fee simple of the property shown on said plans, and to appropriate the sum of $1,200 for expenses in connection therewith.
Does that receive a second? It does. Mr. Pinion, do you wish to address the motion?
Yeah, just to give some background information, the board has 120 days to finalize our street acceptances, and we're assessing every potential acceptance to ensure they comply with all the town standards for acceptance. We feel it's important for the board to do this so the town does not accept a street with problems or defects that the town would then have to fix with your tax dollars. Occasionally, the board finds that a proposed street still has some aspect to it that is not up to standard expectations of the board. In that case, the board will not finalize the acceptance, but rather will not act on it in that particular year, in which case the process must start over again in that year, the next year. And in this case, the town staff will continue to work with the developer to bring the street into compliance with all town standards.
All right. The Finance Committee in a position on this article?
The Finance Committee recommends approval of this article.
Okay. Anyone else wish to be heard on the motion under Article 10? I see no one. All those in favor of the motion under Article 10, please indicate by raising your cards. All those opposed? Passes unanimously. Articles 11 through 22 were disposed of on the consent calendar, which brings us to Article 23, DPW Mining Revolving Fund. Submitted by the DPW, the vote required in a main motion under this article would be a majority vote. Mr. Place?
Mr. Moderator, move to authorize for fiscal year 2004 the use of a revolving fund by the Department of Public Works, the operation of a mining operation on town property located off North Road, the former Malone property, to include payment for all costs associated therewith, including salaries and other benefits, purchase and maintenance of capital equipment, reclamation of the property, and $100,000 to be deposited in the general fund to offset the tax rate, to be funded by the income from the sale of gravel or other materials, said fund to be maintained as a separate account pursuant to Massachusetts General Laws, Chapter 44, Section 53 and a half. The amount to be expended therefrom shall not exceed the sum of $300,000.
Does that receive a second? It does. Place, you recognize the support of your motion.
Thank you, Mr. Moderator. This is basically the reauthorization of the mining revolving fund that was approved at the April 2002 town meeting.
Finance Committee, have a position on this motion?
The Finance Committee recommends approval of this article.
All right. Selectman?
Board of Selectmen recommend approval of this article as well.
Anyone else want to be heard on the motion under Article 23? I see no one. All those in favor of the motion under Article 23, please indicate by raising your cards. Any opposed? Passes. The motion carries. Articles 24, 25, 28, 24. Articles 24 through 28 were disposed of on the consent calendar, which brings us to Article 29, Stormwater Drainage Easements, submitted by the Selectmen. The vote required... Well, I guess there's going to be a motion to indefinitely postpone. Is that correct?
That's correct, Mr. Moderator.
Yeah, all right. Mr. Drabinski?
Yes, Mr. Moderator. Move indefinite postpone this article.
The motion is to indefinitely postpone Article 29. Does that receive a second? It does. Mr. Drabinski, do you wish to address that at all?
Yes, Mr. Moderator. The EPA has postponed the promulgation of the Phase 2 regulations, and until we find out exactly what the regulations are going to look like, it's... not worth the expenditure right now, so I urge you to support this indefinite postponement.
Finance Committee, have anything to say on the motion to indefinitely postpone?
We agree with the Board of Selectmen.
All right. Anyone else want to be heard on the motion to indefinitely postpone Article 29? I see no one. All those in favor of the motion to indefinitely postpone Article 29, please indicate by raising your cards. Any opposed? It is indefinite. Motion to indefinitely postpone carries. Article 30, Purchase Street Lighting, submitted by the Selectmen, a two-thirds vote. This is going to be a borrowing article, is that correct?
Yes.
Yeah. Two-thirds vote will be required. Recognize Selectman Rapinian, but before I do, ladies and gentlemen, as you know, this is a purchase of street lighting involved on the other side of such a transaction would be NSTAR Corporation. As some of you may know, or most of you know, I'm a director of NSTAR. Does anybody object to my presiding? Thank you.
Thank you. Move to appropriate the sum of $55,000 for the purchase of street lighting and all expenses connected therewith, including bond and note issuance expense, and to raise this appropriation to the Treasurer with the approval of the Selectmen is authorized to borrow $55,000 under General Laws, Chapter 44, Section 7.
Does that receive a second? It does. Ms. Valenti, you're going to make the presentation in support of the motion.
So you got the PowerPoint? Thank you, Mr. Moderator. Hopefully this will not take long. We're asking for an unusual article tonight, and if you've read your warrant, the unusual aspects are, first, we're asking for a borrowing authorization just in case. Our hope is that we won't need it, and we will never end up borrowing the money. But if we do have to borrow, the source of the debt repayment is already in a departmental line item. We will not be asking for any additional funds to pay for the debt. Finally, in reality, what we're proposing here is not to spend any more money, but we're planning to save money. Let me explain how. Our proposal is to purchase the fixtures, the street light fixtures, not the poles, but the fixtures, the arm, and the lighting that you see there. There may be a few exceptions to that. There may be some single dedicated poles that only are for the street light, in which case we'd have to buy the pole as well. Most of the poles in town have multiple utilities on them. They have NSTAR and Verizon and the cable TV and even some fire alarm boxes. So all we would be buying is that arm and the lighting fixture. Why would we want to do this? Because we'd like to improve service and the level of service and the control we have over street lighting in town, and also to reduce the cost of our street lights. As a little background, Bill Place and I have been working on this. Wayne Walker, Assistant Town Manager, has been helping us for a little, not quite a year. We already did some preliminary work. We've identified we have 599 street lights in town that would be eligible for purchase by the town. The Restructuring Act of 1997 first permitted towns to purchase the streetlight equipment. Many other towns have done this. At least 20 to 30 have done this when they don't have their own municipal light plant and that they have NSTAR or the other utilities in town that own these light fixtures. Where would savings come from? Just for background, right now we have a line item in the budget that allocates $81,300 for our street lighting expenses. This payment includes the cost of the electricity and delivery of it, as well as the cost of maintaining the street lights. Our consultant, again, we have, has estimated for us that $44,000 of that $81,000 approximately is what we're paying for this maintenance function. That's where we see some potential savings in terms of this maintenance cost. What would be the cost of owning our own street lights? The consultant estimated that we could hire, if we own them and maintain them ourselves, a third party could maintain them for us for about $10,000 annually. Again, I had 44 before. We could have $10,000. But we'd also incur some costs if we did it ourselves. We would have to pay ourselves the police details when a light is being replaced or fixed or adjusted. We estimated $1,500 for the police details for that. We would have to pay for coordination with NSTAR. Our consultant estimated $500 for that. We would now have to insure these new fixtures that we owned, about $1,000 of that. A contingency for in case we lost multiple or more than we thought we're going to have to be replaced or some other problem comes up, $3,000. This would be a total annual cost of $16,000. So again, on an annual basis, $44,000 now, if we purchased them, $16,000, a savings annually of $28,000 if we did purchase them. But first we would have to purchase them and pay for them. What would be that cost? We asked again to the consultant for a preliminary estimate of the cost of these 599 streetlights in the town. Their preliminary estimated depreciated book value purchase price as of July 31 is $49,917 to purchase these light fixtures. So if I tried to say I'd like to purchase them in 04 with the amount we have in there, I would not have enough money. I would be short about $22,000 to purchase them and pay the third party and all the other costs that we detailed. In addition, as I go through what the process is, we're going to need some more consulting hours, and we estimate those could be as much as $10,000. So we do have these one-time costs, purchase and consulting. So the proposal is to purchase these fixtures. Perhaps we could finance it, a $50,000 bond, again, that's the purchase price, for 10 years at 5% would probably cost about $6,400 annually for the debt service. So our annual savings, I said $28,000 before, would be less the debt service, $6,400. So if we finance these for 10 years, we would be having an annual savings, we estimate this time, of $21,600. This is based on the preliminary information we have. There are still some unknowns. From NSTAR, with that price, we know that's the maximum it would cost us to purchase these light fixers, $50,000. But it could be significantly less. NSTAR will not do the final work to comb down and look at that whole list they have. What could be some of the differences? Well, some of the streetlights they've identified might actually be in commercial plazas or in commercial. They might not belong to the town, and so we would not be purchasing those. Our guess is that the ones that they've shown they've added in the last few years that have the highest value are exactly those, because between Bill and I and others, we've been looking around the town, we haven't seen an awful lot of new streetlights and street fixtures in the town. Some towns, I believe the town of Lexington is one, by the time they got the final report and it was fully depreciated, they paid $1 for their light fixtures. The city of Newton, with the aid of their consultant, went through and did vigorous analysis of what NSTAR proposed as here's the depreciated value and reduced their number significantly when they purchased their streetlights. That's why I say $50,000 is the maximum. It could be significantly less when we go through the process of looking and trying to identify the fully depreciated price. Maintenance could also be lower. Again, our consultant worked with us to identify a worst-case scenario, and in the first couple of years we probably would have. There's a lot that has not been maintained, changed, or upgraded. Any vendor who bids or works with us is going to say in the first year, I'm going to be stuck with all the cleanup for years of maybe lack of maintenance. I'm going to have higher maintenance costs in those years, and it would go down after that. Or if we needed to borrow, we could do for 5 years instead of 10. That would reduce the interest cost to the town. It would reduce the savings available, but it would get us sooner to a time when it's free and clear of any debt and we can realize all the savings. Again, cost of the financing and the annual savings there, we would look at that. The next question you might have, well then who would maintain these fixtures for us if NSTAR doesn't do it? Two different options. One is a town-run electrical company, for instance, the Littleton Town Light and Power Company, or the Hudson Company, or the Town of Concord's company. There's a number of municipal ones, and many of them are already doing that. The Town of Wellesley does for Newton. There's a number of them. Reading's does for a number of towns. They have the equipment, they have the training, and they can do it at a very, very reasonable cost to us. Alternatively, there are private companies that do this, and other towns have worked with some private companies. It tends to be a little bit lower cost with these private companies, but those are just sort of the options we would have in front of us. If you approve this, and again, approve the borrowing, so that when I do sit down and go through this process, I know when I get the final cost, I can go ahead and say, yes, we will do this in 04. The process is we'll have to finalize all these numbers with consultants. Again, I'm very hopeful the purchase price will come down because we'll get the documented depreciated book value of the light fixture inventory. We'll determine our financial plan based upon that. And, of course, the maximum is we won't spend more than the $81,000 that we have in the budget for the next year. That's what we have for paying electricity and doing this particular proposal. By fiscal year 05, we should be able to come back and significantly show some reductions in the budget if we do this. I can't guarantee them for 04 right now, because if this doesn't work out, if the depreciated price, if anything about it doesn't work, we can simply walk away from it and keep covering our light fixtures the way they are now. So again, that's the basic proposal. It's not terribly complicated. A number of other towns have done it. The maintenance and the results comes out much better in terms of our control over when a light fixture gets replaced and fixed, when it gets turned on and off, what style we might want in a historic district. A whole variety of things now become more our choice and under our control. Thank you.
The Finance Committee position on this matter?
Finance Committee recommends approval of this article.
Okay. Does anyone else wish to be heard on the motion under Article 30? Yes, ma'am.
Kirsten Van Dyke, 37 Landham Road. I'm just referring to my official warrant, and in the wording of the motion, it specifies $55,000 or any other sum, which is not the same as the wording in your motion. Can we vote on your motion as worded there without referring to this? Is it a new motion that we're looking at? Is it the same motion? It's a technicality, but what I have in front of me says, or any other sum.
You're looking at the article.
Okay.
And this is a useful question. It may help to other people who aren't familiar with the procedure. Everybody refers to passing and not passing articles. In fact, we don't pass and not pass articles. We pass and don't pass motions. We adopt or don't. An article does not self-start itself. Indeed, if we bring up an article and no one says anything, we pass over the article. It doesn't self-start. It is the motion that we all vote on. And in the motion, the selectmen are being more specific as to what the sum will be. The magic words or any other sum is to assure that they can pick a sum, essentially any sum, and not have it ruled out of order as not within the four corners of the article. It's a procedural matter. It's a good question and a good thing to remind us of, because we all fall into thinking we're passing articles. We're not. We're passing motions, not articles. Yes, sir.
Bill Cooper, Cedar Creek Road. Several questions here. Why do we think that NSTAR would want to sell these lights to us in the first place? Question one. Why do we think they would want to sell them to us at their depreciated book value? And questions three, have we looked at what the net present value of the discounted cash flow is that these lights are generating for NSTAR and how that compares to the $50,000 that you've proposed in the Warren article?
The answer to the first two is because they're required to do so by the Restructuring Act. This was something towns and cities were interested in for a long time. It did take the legislature to act on it in 97. They did, and it's not optional for NSTAR whether or not to sell them. It is required by the Act. There were later complications. We started to look at it, and then NSTAR and the other utilities companies were looking at other ways to enhance the cost of these, a pole attachment fee or something like that. The Department of the DTE got very involved in that. That took a while to resolve. I don't know if you remember seeing Framingham was going to buy theirs last year and almost didn't because of this controversy. It was ruled in favor of the towns, so it's not something that's optional. As to the third question, I'm not sure that I haven't done that analysis.
Yes, sir.
Oh. I like to vote against that article because I think it's the system of lights, the poles is an integrated system. I think the estimates and the hopefuls aren't a good hard number to come to the town meeting with. And if they can't get maintenance to change the light bulbs and the lights are out, they're not trying hard enough. And one of the other items is in the article in the town crier the other day, the last sentence, Larry Bryan was a quoter as saying that if we buy new lights in the future, we won't have to go to NSTAR. So I think the real issue is three or four years down the pike to go out and buy brand new lights, which could be maybe $1 million or more. And we'd have to fund that.
Thank you. Could I say, to people over there I have not seen and recognized right away, there's a problem. Is it possible for somebody to bring that mic a little further forward? Because the projector there is blocking my view, and I'm not seeing people, for which
how's
I apologize.
That?
That's fine.
I don't think I gave my name. It's Robert Rogers Longfellow.
Thank you. And I apologize to those of you who waited over there, and I've got a block here. Yes, Mr. Cupp.
Mr. Moderator, I also oppose this article. I just really don't see the point of it. The obvious thing that doesn't seem to have been considered at all is to try to negotiate a lower price from NSTAR. If they're really making a lot of money on it, maybe we can get them to settle for less. To me, it looks like the town is taking on a lot of risk, a lot of unpredictable expenses to save a measly $21,000. Now, if it were 10 times that, then that might make some sense. But for $21,000, the consultant that you're hiring to plan all this is probably going to charge you that much. I think this is nonsense myself.
Mr. Tyler.
Ralph Tyler, 1 Deacon Lane. I'm actually in favor of this. I guess I have a perspective, though, and that is that I see a $63 million budget here with large cost items to get the barest scrutiny, at least that we see as a town meeting, and the barest discussion. And so I'm hoping that this analysis over a $21,000 change will be the model for what we'll be seeing on May 21st in terms of discussion about the budget, because I think we have some major cost centers that do need some discussion and need the analysis, and we need to have the understanding about what those trade-offs are. I commend Maureen for the thorough work that she's done here, but I do have to parrot a little bit of Mr. Coe's comments, which is it's a very, very small part of the budget to be spending as much effort on. Thank you.
Yes, sir.
Chuck Schwager, Ridge Hill Road. You know, we complain when our leaders in town don't act like a business and try to save money, and then we complain when they act like a business and try to save money. I mean, I think we ought to be encouraging and thanking this kind of thinking. Yes, it may be small now, but let's encourage this kind of thinking, and maybe it'll get bigger later. So I say let's support this.
Mr. Coe.
Just one quick comment, Mr. Moderator. It's inconceivable to me that a business would do this.
Gentleman over here.
Cassiel Cheney, New Bridge Road. I remember the days when I actually had to, like, rent the phone from the phone company. And so deregulation is actually sometimes a really good cost-saving effect, you know, for the individuals and I think for this town as well. So.
Anyone else wish to be heard of the motion on Article 30? I see no one. All those in favor of the motion on Article 30, please indicate by raising your cards. All those opposed? The motion passes, and in the judgment of the chair, it passes by a clear two-thirds majority. Article 31. The non-binding resolution, the Community Preservation Committee, submitted by the Community Preservation Committee, a majority vote for this resolution is all that's required. It's non-binding. Mr. Kablak, you're recognized for the resolution. I understand it will be an extensive presentation following this. Have you got a time frame in mind?
I would say it would be about 20 to 25 minutes.
And now, is there any objection to that?
Yes.
Yes. I'm afraid of that. Now we start the bargain. let's find out. The request is for 30 minutes under Article 31. How many of you oppose that? Is it a majority?
How many
do not oppose it? All right, it's clear that 30 minutes is too much. All right.
Mr. Moderator.
How's 20, Sandy?
These
people have a prepared presentation, and I think it's important that we hear it. Take it easy, Mr. Kablak.
I would like to explain why we need this much time. It is
I know why you need the time, and I'm sure everybody else does.
I don't think the audience does, with all due respect.
Well,
it is not myself that is giving the presentation.
I understand that. Is 20 minutes too much? Yes, Mr. Coe. Well, is that a motion to adjourn?
Yes.
Ah! That gets it up. I need a two-thirds vote on that. All those in favor? Any opposed? We're adjourned for tomorrow night at 7:30.
Thank you.
faith the volunteers to take action is not a crisis. I don't know about that.